C2SP. Number 5B.
We come to the next subtone spirit, which reads as an epitome, as soon as it understood that mortal beliefs are unreal, they have no more power over men. So we come to the point, how can the spiritualism be destroyed within our consciousness, within our individualized consciousness? And it says, well, the moment we see that mortal beliefs are not real, then when they have no more reality and we understand them as having no reality, then they have no more power over us, and we have power over the belief. So in the text, line 18, she says, suffering, sinning, dying beliefs are unreal. See, she first had shown that they are beliefs. Now she says that they are unreal. When divine science is universally understood, again we have the term of understanding that comes in and comes in again and again, they will have no power over man, for man is immortal and lives by divine authority. So that tone shows that the very first thing we have to understand here in spirit is that spiritualism or beliefs are not real. That's a great point, that first we see that spiritualism is a belief, and that spiritualism in that realm of belief works, that it works as any other belief works, and so we have to see, we only can destroy it or overcome it when we see that those beliefs have no divine reality, that they only seem to be real but are not real. And in order to see that, naturally, we have to see the allness of spirit. Then we come to the next point of soul. The true man is sinless and immortal. So she lifts that individual consciousness higher and says, first you have to see that spiritualism is a belief. When you have seen that belief is unreal, then third, you have to see that the real is sinless and immortal. So we have a short description of that in the next paragraph. The sinless joy, you hear soul, the sinless joy. The perfect harmony and immortality of life. Can you constantly, she brings in soul and life, immortality of life, the identities of being. So we only have really a sinless joy when we see the harmony of soul and life, of the identities of being. So the sinless joy, I read it again, the perfect harmony and the immortality of life, possessing unlimited divine beauty and goodness without a single bodily pleasure or pain. That's how she defines just one thing, namely sinless joy. So that's constitute the only veritable, indestructible man whose being is spiritual. So the sentence could be abbreviated for us in order to us to understand and just say, the sinless joy, and then go on, constitutes the only veritable, indestructible man whose being is spiritual. So joy is now spiritual. Then she gives the tone of principle with the next sentence to the end of the paragraph. This state of existence is scientific. Now again she introduces that it must be understood, or that we must have a scientific concept of spirit in order to handle spiritualism. This state of existence is scientific and intact, a perfection discernible only by those who have the final understanding of Christ. Again, the final understanding we must have. Without that, we can never see the scientific fact in divine science. So we have a very strong touch there of science, of principle. Death can never hasten this state of existence. For death must be overcome, not submitted to before immortality appears. So the way to overcome death, therefore the counterfeit of the identities of being or the spiritual sense of life, the joyous sense of life, is through science. And we must understand it scientifically. How? We come to the tone of life, and the epitome here reads, this understanding comes step by step. Now we have the progressive unfoldment, not suddenly, nor at a single bound. This is something that she says. You see, she never says every problem can be solved immediately or spontaneously. You have another term, can be solved
instantaneously.
Yes. Christian scientists would like to solve every problem instantaneously. Well, that is more or less sometimes possible when it is concerned with physical problems, with bodily problems. But the life problems, they are always problems that take time, that Mrs. Eddy says, they take time. You can't do that in one step. It is a gradual development, and we must admit it to ourselves that we are working out life problems step by step. Or we get dissatisfied with us, impatient with us. We accuse ourselves that we do not make the demonstration, that we do not advance quick enough, and accuse ourselves for something that Mrs. Eddy herself over and over says, well, this is not possible. It takes time. It takes step by step of a developing consciousness. So the recognition of spirit and of infinity, it's again the recognition, you could have also have said the understanding of spirit and of infinity, comes not suddenly here or hereafter. She even puts it into the hereafter and says, naturally she had said death doesn't do it. Death doesn't solve every problem. It is must be a scientific solution, not a solution through death. That was the tone of principle. You need the understanding of the scientific fact in divine science. That's what is needed, not death. But even after death, things are not solved. That recognition of spirit must finally come, or comes not suddenly, here or hereafter. So it gives a sense that the hereafter is not just solving everything. So the pious Polycarp said, I cannot turn at once from good to evil, nor can we turn at once from evil to good. Neither do other mortals accomplish the change from error to truth at a single bound. So the life problem, to work out really that which is so important for our being, that these are the life problems. And they are more tenacious, so to say, than a physical problem. Because it's very easy to see, we like to get rid of the physical problem. Nobody likes to suffer, nobody likes to have pain, nobody likes if the body does not work harmoniously. So we like to get rid of it. Not so in life. In life, we do not like to get rid of a spiritualistic life. Everybody likes to hang on to spiritualism. Everybody likes to hang on that life should be prolonged in matter, that life should be prolonged in the body, and woe if it is not prolonged in the body, then we are not happy with it, we don't accept that, and so we stick to the spiritualism of life, and therefore it is much harder, so to say, to get rid of it. A physical problem is easier also because we were healthy before, we knew how to be healthy, and then we are sick, and then we like to go back to the healthy state of things. But spiritualism is something that was hanging on humanity for thousands of years and thousands of years. You know that also in the Old Testament, King Saul turned to spiritists and turned to a medium and tried to get into contact with Samuel and ask Samuel what to do. So the claim of spiritualism is a collective belief, it's a universal belief, it's a traditional belief, it's an archetypal belief, and to get rid of all these beliefs is much more difficult and takes much more an awakening of consciousness than physical healing. But we can see that, therefore, to solve the question of death is not the same as to solving the question of a physical healing. It's not on the same level that we just can get rid of a disease more easily than we can of death, because death is a life problem. Death isn't anything, it's just another step where we come from the here to the hereafter, as we have seen, and that the problems have, that the recognition of spirit comes slowly here and hereafter, so that it is asked much more that important point, which Mrs. Eddy points out again and again. I come back to that article, Caution in the Truth in Unity of God, where she says, well, the science of physical harmony, is that what she was teaching 100 years ago? But that is not what she really has discovered. Really what she has discovered is divine science, the science of spirit. And that takes time. We must first be drilled in the planar manual of our spiritual armament before that state of things can be achieved. So spiritualism is actually waking us up and saying, look here, are you aware that you are absolutely sick? You are sick of the belief that spirit is in matter, and that you stick to that sin. Perhaps we could call it sin instead of sickness. To that absolutely unnatural belief that spirit must be matter, that everything that is divine must show itself forth in matter and remain in matter and dwell in matter. That's really a hard belief. And so that chapter on spiritualism should really make us aware that we have a much bigger problem to solve than just the physical healing. That physical healing, they come and they go, and you know how often people get sick and have physical problems. But that is not really the life problem. The life problem is to get away from spiritualism. Then we come to the next subtone of truth, where the epitome reads, until the spiritual understanding of life is reached, you have again the until, error brings its own self-destruction. So we leave it to error to destroy itself. For instance, we have here the text that says, existence continues to be a belief of corporeal sense until... So again we have an indication that here or hereafter, existence continues to be a belief of corporeal sense. When does the end come about? Until the science of being is reached. Again we see what Mrs. Eddy said in that Art and Caution of the Truth, that what she discovered was the science really of spiritual being and not of physical harmony, of spiritual harmony. And we are actually engaged in working out really the science of being, not the science of physical harmony. That's what we teach in our class. That's what we stand for in our teaching, that we are in the first place, not in the only place, but in the first place, interested to awake the student's thought, to turn away from spiritualism, turn away from the longing just always have physical harmony, and turn it away to that which is much more important, namely that which works out their life problem, to the science of spiritual harmony. So we teach the science of being, we teach them as a science through the categories, through the capitalized terms, through laws and orders and rules and system and categories and structures, through method, and through the plane of love, through matrices, etc., etc., because that is the way how the science of being can be taught. That's why we are not just confined, say, to the chapter on physiology plus the chapter on Christian Science practice, which more or less constitute the groundwork for physical healing. Actually, only the chapter on physiology does that. We are interested in the whole textbook and in taking in all the aspects of the textbook and see the textbook gives the science of being. Yes. We go back to the tone of truth, and I read again that first sentence and go on. Existence continues to be a belief of corporeal sense until the science of being is reached. So she doesn't say until we are healed of a bodily condition, until the science of being is reached. And that's quite a different thing. Error brings its own self-destruction. That's so true, both here and hereafter, which indicates we don't have constantly to fight against something. We don't have to fight spiritualism. We don't have to fight a ghost, a spirit, an illusion. We don't have to fight that. That's in vain. We just have to let error destroy itself. But that error, we cannot see that it destroys itself unless we understand the science of being. So we deal with error not by dealing with error, we deal with error by filling our consciousness with the science of being and let that destroy the error. So error brings its own self-destruction both here and also hereafter. So what is not solved here must be solved hereafter. For mortal mind creates its own physical conditions. And as we have seen, spiritualism is a belief of mortal mind, and it's a belief of the hereafter, so mortal mind remains mortal mind here or hereafter, and creates also here and hereafter its own physical condition. Death will occur on the next plane of existence. Do you see what Mrs. Eddy says? He says, look here, I preach you that death will also occur on the next plane of existence, but under certain conditions, namely, as on this, until, the spiritual understanding of life is reached. Again, that spiritual understanding of life. We see how that whole tone of truth builds on the preceding subject of life, where Jesus showed how life deals with the belief in death. Now truth comes and says, now until you understand the science of life, the science of being, until then death will occur. But if you understand the science of life, that's the truth about spiritualism, and that truth destroys the belief in spiritualism. Do you hear the build-up of these subjects, how they are orderly presented step by step, one next step building on the preceding step, then just a short touch of love, then and not until then, Again, then, and not until then, will it be demonstrated that the second death hath no power. So she refers here to Revelation, or to the second death that has no power, meaning, she said, death will occur, and will occur on this plane, on the next plane, on the next plane, on the next plane, which will occur, it will occur until we get the spiritual understanding of life. Only then do we get out of that roundabout that goes roundabout with birth and death and reincarnation and birth and death and reincarnation. We get out of that roundabout when we jump off that roundabout and jump off right away and say, I don't have anything to do with it anymore. I begin to see another realm, not the realm of life in matter, but the realm of life in and of spirit. And so get a spiritual understanding of life, and then the second death will have no more power. The second death is that death where we lose the belief in death, where we lose the belief that there is death, that there must be death, and that there are death. When we lose that belief, then we have overcome the second death. And in this way, she ends really that whole subject of truth, how we get rid of spiritualism, which says that after death, we are living on in a spiritual way, and after that, you have another death, and then after that death, we always are living on again as a spirit, and a spiritual corporeality, and another death, and another spiritual corporeality, and so on. So the side note here is second death. And how do we work out that whole belief in spiritualism, in reincarnation, in being reborn into this world or into another world? That is the great problem to work out. And it can take many, many lives, so to say, to work it out. But for the first time in human history, as far as we know it, Mrs. Eddy gives an answer how we can get out of that roundabout and really feel that we can be rooted in the one life that has no more birth and no more death. Yes, now what did we see in this subject of truth? Let's just see if we can recapitulate. How do we find ourselves as the idea man and not to be a spirit? As we are here and sitting here, we are spirits. We are spirits. We are ghosts. We are the belief that life is in matter. We are the belief that mind is in matter, that spirit is in matter, that soul is in the body. We live in the belief that life is in our body, that truth is in our body, or in our consciousness, in our human consciousness. We believe all that. So we are spirits. How on earth are we getting away to be a spirit, and how do we become man? Man as idea. As the moment we have idea, we have no more beliefs, because an idea is always the creation of the divine mind. And if we see man as idea, then we are free from spiritualism. Naturally, we have said that over and over, without thinking, like a parrot, we say, well, man is an idea of God, and think that that is a very great statement. And usually it has no content in it. It is just terms, just words, just a statement and repeating words. That's all there is. We really have to think about it. What does it mean that man is idea? So Mrs. Eddy gives here a first inkling of what man is in the textbook, here in a chapter on spiritualism, and says, look here, Man is actually a form of understanding reality, of understanding spirit, of the recognition that all is spirit. Then, on that basis, you can begin to see that spirit only expresses itself as mind, and that mind cognizes only ideas, nothing material. Then in the second one, she could see that man, therefore, as idea, is the only reality. That is the real man. The ideational man is the real man and has nothing to do with matter and with the spirit. In soul, she calls it that we have a sinless man, the sinless joy. That man is fundamentally sinless and immortal, therefore does not need any death in order to become immortal. Then, in principle, she says that that man is discernible only through science. That man as idea that is real and sinless is only discernible through scientific understanding and not through the physical senses. We can never with the physical senses have any kind of recognition of what the idea man is. And then she says, and this appears gradually. And that's the tone of life. You see, at this point she doesn't go to an absolute statement and could have said in life, and this man is immortal. Here in spiritualism she says, and that man appears step by step. It gradually appears. How does it appear? And shows in truth it appears because error begins to destroy itself. So if I have the foundation of mind, spirit, soul, principle, that's always our foundation, then that begins to demonstrate life, truth, and love. And here she shows it, it's a working out of a lifelong story that then life says, in the measure as you understand and recognize spirit, that in that measure you will gradually demonstrate what man is. Because then you have had, you build on the principle of man, and that's the truth about the error called spiritualism and spirit. So this state is reached through the self-destruction of error. That error gives itself up, so that finally, and the last sentence, we can see that finally salvation is inevitable. It becomes inevitable that the second death has no more power over you. Yeah. That's the tone of truth. We make a break and take then the last tone.